Good afternoon. It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday News. Thank you for listening to KMXT on 100.1 FM. It's your public radio station. Broadcasting from Signal Hill here in Kodiak, Alaska, where it's 36 degrees. We're looking at scattered showers until 3 o'clock today, then rain after 3. High near 39 today. Southwest wind to 10 miles per hour should turn to the southeast this afternoon. For tonight, rain mainly before midnight, low around 34, and east wind to 20, becoming southeast. Chance of precipitation tonight, 90%. Coming up on the midday report, Senate President Michicki talks about the disaster declaration, or lack thereof. The Alaska House has reached a majority caucus as of yesterday. Governor Dunleavy and members of administration gathered Sunday to lay out some changes. And housing relief. Renters from Alaska can apply for another round soon. That and more after national headlines.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. The COVID-19 vaccine supply in the United States is increasing again. As NPR's Tamara Keith explains, the White House announced today a doubling in doses headed to pharmacies.
The White House says it is able to double the number of vaccine doses going to local pharmacies this week, from 1 million to 2 million. And Press Secretary Jen Psaki said states will get 13.5 million doses.
This is a 57% increase from the amount states received when the president was inaugurated. So since then, obviously, we have announced a couple of increases over the course of time.
Asked whether President Biden, now nearly a month into his administration, owns the pandemic, Psaki said, yes, he does.
That's why it's the issue he wakes up every morning and is focused on, because addressing it is what's on the minds of the American people. And he's the president. It's his responsibility to focus on it.
Though she added that the Trump administration left them with supply problems and localities fending for themselves. Tamara Keith, NPR News, the White House.
While most of Texas grapples with power outages caused by extreme cold weather, Lubbock and the surrounding area seem to be spared until this morning. Texas Tech Public Media's Casey Ellingson reports that starting today, the area is undergoing controlled rolling blackouts.
After exhausting available reserve energy overnight, Southwest Power Pool instructed member utility companies, which includes Lubbock's largest provider, to begin controlled power outages. The blackouts last 15 to 45 minutes at a time. SPP Chief Operating Officer Lanny Nickel says their hope is to avoid longer, uncontrolled outages as dangerous weather conditions evolve.
We are thinking and hoping that, based on everything we know right now, that we will be out of this by Thursday.
By mid-morning, outages were temporarily halted, but utility companies remain on high alert. SPP is urging residents to reduce electricity use while the company manages the crisis. I'm Casey Ellingson in Lubbock.
Days after being acquitted in his second Senate impeachment trial, former President Donald Trump is now defending himself against a federal lawsuit over last month's insurrection at the U.S. Capitol. The chairman of the House Committee on Homeland Security, Representative Benny Thompson, is suing Trump and his personal lawyer, Rudy Giuliani. The Biden administration is moving ahead with repairing diplomatic ties, but last month's insurrection and the threat it posed to U.S. democracy looms large. Secretary of State Tony Blinken talked about it with NPR.
There is no doubt that our ability to wave the banner of democracy and human rights to some extent has been tarnished by recent events, especially the egregious attack on the Capitol on January 6th. On the other hand, what's so powerful about it is that our democracy is resilient.
More of Blinken's interview can be heard on NPR's All Things Considered. You're listening to NPR News.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
Legislators are trying to figure out what the expiration of Alaska's disaster declaration means for the state. Alaska has had disaster declarations in place since March, But the latest declaration expired this weekend when the legislature could not reorganize in time to pass a bill, and Governor Mike Dunleavy did not take unilateral action to renew the order. Some effects of that lapse aren't entirely clear. Travelers will no longer need to get tested for COVID-19 when they arrive in the state. That's just a recommendation now. What's unclear is whether this will impact the aid Alaska receives from the federal government, said Soldotna Republican Senator Pete Michiki. On Friday, the Senate president implored Governor Mike Dunleavy to declare a new, more narrow health order for that reason.
What we're talking about today is, please, for God's sake, let's tell the governor that we need him to create a new order so that the hundreds of millions of dollars that will help us put Alaskans back on their feet will come to our state.
That was before the weekend. Michiki said Monday he'd since talked to the governor's office.
And their determination was that we did not need an extension or a new declaration, that they could, in fact, handle what was available and what was likely to become available from the feds without a declaration being in place.
He's referring to the CARES Act funding the state receives from the federal government. Officials question whether some of that aid will go away without a declaration. Health and Social Services Commissioner Adam Crum said the state can only access federal food stamp aid, totaling $8 million a month, with an emergency declaration in place. But it's all up in the air, Michiki says, since it's uncharted territory. The only other state that currently does not have a COVID-19 disaster declaration is Michigan. Michiki said officials are trying to verify that the state is right in thinking they don't need a declaration to access funds.
If they are correct, then we support the need to not have a declaration. We certainly feel that it's time to begin the full economic process while protecting Alaskans from the effects of COVID.
In addition to its economic impacts and health-related mandates, the disaster declaration waived some 200 regulations to help agencies operate under remote conditions. Dunleavy said his office is working to determine what regulations can and should be waived. Dunleavy has framed the expiration of the declaration as a step on the path to normalcy. Michiki says his conversations this weekend have made him cautiously optimistic about it all.
I'm not 100% right now in that guarantee that those funds will be free-flowing to the people of Alaska. I want to get to that point here in the next few days. But I am feeling good that the right decision was made and that we can move forward without there being any gaps in service to the people that need them.
He noted that the governor can declare another disaster declaration if necessary. The Alaska House reached a majority caucus yesterday. That's mostly made up of Democrats, but it's seeking to add Republican members. Republican Representative Kelly Merrick of Eagle River has joined the majority, giving it 21 members. Merrick said she wanted to have a Republican majority, but with the House closely divided, it would be necessary to work across party lines.
I am working closely with Republican Speaker Louise Stutes to form a functional, diverse caucus with many Republicans in key leadership positions.
Merrick was the deciding vote in making Stutes from Kodiak the speaker on Thursday. But another 4 days passed before Merrick joined the caucus. Merrick and Stutes currently are the only Republicans in the majority. Stutes says she also wants people from different parties to shape the majority.
The intent is to have a bipartisan coalition where everybody has an opportunity to participate. It's open to members from both sides, and I'm happy about that.
While the 21 Republicans elected in November could have been enough to form a majority, Stutes stayed with the mostly Democratic caucus she had been with for 4 years. She says her constituents have benefited from the caucus's work. Her decision contributed to a deadlock that prevented other leadership positions from being filled in the first 28 days of the legislative session. Stutes says all committee positions are open, but she adds that under current discussions, Merrick and Representative Bryce Edgman of Dillingham would serve as the co-chairs of the House Finance Committee, which works on the state government budget. She also says that the Democratic Representative Chris Tuck of Anchorage would serve as the majority leader under current discussions. The committee chairs and members won't be finalized until the majority of the House votes to approve them. Stutes named the seven members to the House Committee on Committees, which will nominate the chairs of committees and their members for the House to vote on. Wasilla Representative Kathy Tilton, a senior Republican, says Stutes didn't consult with the Republican caucus in choosing the Committee on Committees members.
We can definitely have better communications and be better organized.
It's not clear when the Committee on Committees will meet. Many of the emergency orders the state was using to respond to the COVID-19 pandemic expired along with the governor's disaster declaration early Sunday morning. But it's not yet clear what impacts that will have on everything from vaccine distribution to curbside pickup and delivery of alcohol. Governor Mike Dunleavy's and members of his administration gathered Sunday to lay out some of the changes.
You'll see that we have no mandated advisories now.
Some things, like travel testing, are clear. Alaska residents and non-residents traveling to the state are no longer required by the state to get a pre-travel COVID-19 test or to test upon arrival.
But if you wish to get on the plane at the airport without a test, you can do that.
The state advises that travelers do it, and it will still be an option to test at the airport through the end of June. But that doesn't mean that people can travel throughout the state freely without being tested. Some cities, like Juneau, are still requiring it. The administration laid out a COVID-19 transition plan in which Dunleavy characterized as moving Alaska toward normalcy. But there have been a lot of other parts of the state's COVID-19 response that are going to be impacted by the lapsed disaster declaration. Some 200 regulations that had been suspended will be going back into effect. That will impact everything from curbside pickup to alcohol to telemedicine.
None of that stuff is changing as of today.
Instead, commissioners will review those policies over the next several weeks. Dunleavy says they'll advise him on what needs to stay in place and what he should allow to lapse. One other thing that isn't clear is how the state will continue allocating vaccines. Director of Public Health Heidi Hedberg says the state's disaster declaration and the plan it submitted to the federal government gave it the legal authority that it needs to distribute vaccines into communities.
And given that we feel like we will be able to continue distributing the vaccines to Alaskans at least through the month of March.
What's still unclear is how the state will legally distribute vaccines into communities after that point. Hedberg said that the state's response to community requests may be slower. Starting today, Alaskans can apply for another round of rental assistance. Alaska Housing Finance Corporation is helping renters who are struggling to pay rent during the pandemic with up to 12 months of their rent and utilities. The Kenai Peninsula Borough and several peninsula cities offered similar versions of the program last year. Money for that round was routed through boroughs and municipalities and administered by AHFC. This time around, the money is going through the state. The federal government set aside $200 million in CARES funds for Alaska's program. Another difference from the fall is this program is restricted to renters. That rules out homeowners who made up nearly half of the recipients last round. Last year's version of the program saw high demand locally. Applications for this round are due March 5th. Even if you've received housing help from the AHFC in the past, you can still apply to this program. Go to alaskahousingrelief.org to check your eligibility for the program. All 18 pro-class teams left in this year's Iron Dog have reached the halfway point in Nome. The race route, as well as some logistics, were tweaked this year due to the COVID-19, but most of the racers are adjusting well so far into the 2,600-mile race. With timing and rest accounted for, Team 6 of George and Schlachty are currently in first position, followed by Brett Lapham and Zach Weiss of Team 5 in second position. In third position is Team 10, Mike Morgan of Nome and Chris Olds. Morgan, who has won two Iron Dogs thus far, is happy to be on the trail again this year.
I'm glad we could still have the race this year despite the stuff that's going on.
According to the current standings, Morgan and Olds are just 10 minutes behind the leaders Brad, George, and Robbie Shackley. All of the top four teams are less than 15 minutes apart at this point of the race. George and Shackley have a total course time of 19 hours and 48 minutes. Second position, Lapham and Weiss have a total course time of 19 hours and 50 minutes. This year's racers sped into Nome days earlier than the usual, since the course is slightly altered to have fewer layover checkpoints, less overnight stops, and a direct route from Big Lake to Nome instead of going up to Kotzebue first. Shane Barber of team number 3 has competed in the Iron Dog 15 times, although he is a rookie to the pro class. He says this year's changes require races to change their approach to the over 2,000-mile race.
I think just the overall distance kind of taking some of the cards off the table as far as layover points, things like that. That's definitely at everybody's forefront of thoughts, you know, as far as how they approach the race. So you got to be a little more cautious.
Barber is joined by his 16-year-old son, Evan, who is also a rookie to the Iron Dog this year. Currently, the father-son duo is in eighth position. Barber says he and his teammate, his son, don't really have the strategy other than to finish this year's race. Along with the other teams, they will all have time today to wrench and inspect their sleds to get ready for the rest of the trip.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. Wearing masks is now mandatory on fishing boats. More after this.
The Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute provides digital and print marketing materials to the Alaska seafood industry. Find thousands of stunning photos, high-quality video footage, and sales tools at alaskaseafood.org.
All fishermen in U.S. waters must wear masks while they're underway, even while sleeping, and the Coast Guard intends to enforce it. The order is in place now, and fishermen are encouraged to send in comments and questions. It stems from an edict issued as a public health emergency by the Center for Disease Control in a marine safety bulletin issued on February 1st. It requires the wearing of masks at all times on fishing vessels, when boarding, disembarking, and for the duration of travel to prevent the spread of the COVID-19 virus. The action states that conveyance operators traveling into or within the U.S. may transport only persons wearing masks and must use best efforts to ensure that masks are worn. Best efforts include allowing entry to a vessel only to those who wear masks, instructing persons that failure to comply constitutes a violation of federal law, and removing any person who refuses to comply. Exceptions to the rule apply while eating or drinking or communicating with a hearing-impaired person or if a person is unconscious. A fisherman who is the only operator aboard also can go maskless. National Fisherman editor Jessica Hathaway was the first to break the news last week. She said that enforcing this rule would certainly be difficult, but the Coast Guard clarified to her that it will be enforced. She added that it clearly opens the door for being boarded and fined. The mask requirement will remain in effect until it's modified or rescinded by the Secretary of Health and Human Services. Fishermen and others can submit comments and questions via email. Find links at alaskafishradio.com. Fish Radio is also brought to you by OBI Seafoods. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.